Yeah. I'm excited to introduce to you one of my favorite human beings in the world, Leia Ogihara, who, for context, we're part of this. She's in year two of this really intensive 1 year program. So she's a T2, which means that this is her second year. And then she has a bunch of coaches. And I was her coach, one of her coaches last quarter in Landmark's leadership team. Wait, Landmark's team management and leadership program. Welcome, Leia.
Hi.
You have gotten
interesting being here.
Yes. Yeah. This. So let's start off with giving stuff up from the already always paradigm for communication. We're kind of modeling what like a meeting, what one of Landmark's meetings is like, because I know some of you guys are curious about it. So would love to discuss a little bit more about the programs and how it's impacted our lives.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm going to start by giving up resisting, because I'm resisting right now, resisting being on this camera, fixing, protecting, justifying, resisting again.
Nice.
And you?
Yeah, I would say protecting, defending, justifying, convincing, and fixing. And this is from the already always paradigm. So what that means is we all have different ways of being, and sometimes there's things that get in the way of us being able to communicate and simply just be with others, like other human beings. So we're, both of us are just giving up things so that we can be more present in our conversation. And then now we will be putting in a new paradigm for communication.
What I'm creating newly is acknowledging and nothing. I'm going to be at nothing.
That's awesome. And I would like to put in acknowledgement as well, and dancing in the conversation, recreating myself and others, and also bringing nothing to the conversation.
Beautiful.
All right. And then the third step in how we start meetings is to create a new possibility. So what would we want to create for a possibility for our podcast today?
Being powerful, intentional, and loving in communication. How's that?
Yes, love it. All right. And then the next step is one of the team members will generate what we just said. So we the pod episode 142, we are creating an intentional, or being intentional, powerful, and loving in communication, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yay. Yeah. Yay. It's always interesting because we do it so many times, but yet there's a lightness that comes after we give stuff up, right? It never gets old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. So, so one of the reasons and the intentions that we wanted to have this conversation was just to it's the end of the year, actually. So it'd be cool to reflect on like a full year. And both of us, a good chunk of that year was in Landmark's team management and leadership program. So would love to discuss. And also, I also want to acknowledge you, Leia, for your very generous donation and contributions to helping me reach our goal at the Orphans Future Alliance. You never cease to take people's breath away. Like it's just a beautiful gift that you have to be able to just be so kind and loving with just pure intention and joy and love. So I really just want to acknowledge you for that.
And thank you for that. Thank you for your very generous listening of me, always acknowledging me when we're together. I really got present to resisting your acknowledgement right now through this team management leadership program. I really got to see my blind spot, which is that I resist acknowledgement. So right now, as you were providing me with a generous acknowledgement. I felt myself sort of retreat and not want to hear it. And so I said to myself, listen to him. So thank you always for your generous words of me. And Davidson, I too acknowledge you for everything that you contribute to the orphans in Vietnam, in Southeast Asia. Really amazing what the work that you do, what you contribute, the time and efforts you put into these children that you have not even met. Really amazing.
Yeah.
So I so acknowledge you for really looking out for the future of these children.
Thank you so much, Leah. And to provide additional context, one of the reasons why I started this project is when I was in Landmark Self-Expression Leadership Program, that was one of my projects. And that I got over my, well, getting over is a maybe oversimplification, but I was very, very afraid of looking bad and just asking for donations. And like we talk about this often, like being Asian, like asking for donations from thousands of people is just like very vulnerable and very scary thing to do for Asians who really care about their saving face and their reputation and looking bad. And it was really scary to go through that. And I remember one day I called like 100 people in a row to ask for donations. And surprisingly enough, like 50 out of the 100 people donated money. But it was just one of the scariest moments of my life. I remember that very clearly.
I can see that. I can understand that. But where you were standing is it wasn't about you, right? Like it was about the children. And so you were able to come out of your comfort zone and actually ask for money. And so that's really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every dollar that you're collecting really makes a difference for these children. Every dollar, right? $10 is a big deal over there in Vietnam.
So yeah, you're completely right. It's we spend, I mean, for instance, I just bought a Canada Goose, right? Which was equivalent to funding three orphans for a full year in Vietnam, right? Like food, wow. Room and board. And it's just like mind blowing to think, you know, we lived in a very, you know, affluent area, like being in New York City, right? We're exposed to a lot of affluent people. And it's just mind blowing sometimes to think like, even so, like, you know, we have a lot of we're not grateful sometimes.
Yeah, really, right? Like we walk into Starbucks and we spend $6 for a latte when that provides probably what, housing, food for these children for a month, maybe one child.
Yeah, a long, like at least a week. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, a week. Yeah. It's very humbling.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you. And I also wanted to like pick your brain about, so you've been, you do a lot of coach things, like being head coach, coaching are the leaders of Landmark Team Leadership Management Program. Would love to learn a little bit more about what it's like being head coach now.
Yeah, I just love being a part of the communication courses for Landmark. The reason why I love it is really because the work allows us to see all of our blind spots, how we listen to people, how we speak, the words that come out of our mouth. Typically, prior to this work, we're not responsible. We're not responsible for the things that we say to people. And we're not listening to people. We're listening to people from our filters. So for instance, there's this distinction called the point of view that we trap ourselves in, that we identify in a Landmark communication course, Access to Power. And I discovered that I listened from I don't matter and the world is scary, right? So when people say something, I'm listening from that filter, I don't matter and the world is scary, which means I'm really not listening to people. And when I'm in communication with somebody, I'm listening with judgment, assessment, like my brain is interpreting everything a person is saying to me from sort of my filters, and I'm really not getting what a person is saying to me. So I am a huge proponent of being a coach and being a head coach for these communication courses, because the two courses that I took, Access to Power and Power to Create, really opened up a whole world for me. First of all, that I really don't listen to people. I'm not, I say that I am. I used to think I'm a great listener, terrible listener, I realized. And I wasn't being responsible for the things that come out of my mouth. So it's what you get from being a participant on this course, it really opens up a whole new world for them, right? They realize, wow, like I actually have the power to create my life through listening to people from nothing, listening to people powerfully and responding, not reacting. Now, being a coach is a different experience because you get to be sort of like this extension of the course leader. You really get to be with the participant and support them through this ordinary way that we speak and listen. And then we walk them through stepping into like a new world of listening and speaking. And by the time the 3 days is over for people who participated in the communication course, they're really standing in a different world. So it's so powerful to be a coach and to have created that pathway for that participant. Now, I love being a head coach for the communication courses. And what that is I'm responsible for anywhere from 20 to like 40 coaches that support the participants. And in there, who I get to be, what I'm responsible for is that I'm a clearing for these coaches to really be a contribution for the participants. And it's really a fascinating accountability being a head coach, because based on who I'm being, as in how am I listening to people? What's coming out of my mouth? Am I being responsible with the things that I say to them, right? The coach's performance, whether they're effective for the participant, is affected, which then means the participants, what they get from the course and how they're going to be able to get the promised outcomes of the course, that's affected. I'm literally fully responsible for how our coaches show up for our participants. So it really has given me, it really puts me in check of who I'm being as like a human being. Am I being generous? Am I being kind? Am I being compassionate? Am I really listening to people from nothing without all of my judgments, interpretations, assessments, and all the garbage that I might listen to people from? So it's really, I just love being a head coach, and I love also coaching, because the distinction of the communication course really allows us to disarm, take the armors off from the way we listen and speak.
Wow. There's a lot you just said there. It's just mind-blowing. I mean, you really embody the word transformation, right? Because the fact that you're saying that you used to not be able to listen, it's just so far beyond my comprehension that it's just hard to believe. But if you're saying that's true, then obviously, like, you know yourself better, right?
Terrible.
It's just hard to believe that. but you know, you have been in a lot of quarters of team leadership management, and you know, you coached a lot. You've coached many people, and so, you know, this is me knowing you much later on in that process, right? So yeah, that's fascinating, and I really appreciated what you said about like a clearing. I think in our corporate world or in business or in society, we often like look up to experts, right? People who have these credentials, these MDs, these doctorates, these JDs, and we look to them, and oftentimes that gets in the way actually of simply just being with someone and just creating newly, right?
Yeah, I love what you said. We're listening or speaking from knowing. Like I know, and therefore I say, or I know, so maybe what you're saying, I'm disagreeing with, and so I'm judging you or I'm assessing you because I'm listening from I know. And what I'm recognizing lately, really what I'm discovering from being in the team management leadership program is I know got me far in life. I became successful in my field. But at really this stage of more where we're working towards self-actualization, I know actually is what limits me. I know created a lot for me. I was a very competent, successful entrepreneur, but now at this stage, I know is what reduces my possibility. So then what does that look like? What is the world beyond I know? I don't know yet.
It's fascinating, right? Because when you look at people that have achieved a certain amount of success that you have, right, with so many locations, so many people that you've inspired and touched and moved, and so many people that you've impacted, it's just interesting to see how us humans are always looking for more contribution, leaving more of a legacy, even though comparing you to any average person, like you've achieved like pretty much like the pinnacle of success, you know?
Of course, I couldn't accept what you just said right now. So I would pause because I was deflecting internally. I wasn't right there. I just got really present to my resistance to your acknowledgement. Well, so before this work, I wouldn't even notice that. Yeah,
that's true. Well, but even before like the landmark success, right, of you impacting like hundreds of lives, like on a like daily basis, I'm talking about like at the business level, like as like a, from a superficial, like, hey, she has success. She's mentioned in newspapers and all these articles and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, you reached like what society considers like a very successful person. So then I'm curious as to like why someone makes the switch to want to move beyond that, you know, because it's like, okay, you've reached what most people are thriving for, you know, or striving for.
Thanks for asking me that. Yeah, one could say, and I resist saying this because I obviously, you know, a gap of mine is self-acknowledgement. And yes, if you put my resume like on paper, I supposedly achieved success. And I did, but I wasn't happy. I produce results. I get stuff done. And the more competent I became, the more exhausted I became.
Okay.
And the more I achieved, I started to lose myself. In fact, I would admit that I didn't even know who I actually was anymore, the higher I climbed on the ladder. Because I'm so busy trying to get somewhere, and I'm already there, but I'm not content with the fact that I'm there. And so it hit me. What am I doing? And so in the work of Landmark, we call that the winning formula, right? Like we're good at something. And we do and do and do, and we're good at it. We achieve success. And what it actually was a compensation, for whatever we thought that we didn't have, or some sort of, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, I'm whatever, in order to hide that, what we call our winning formula really kicks into high gear and we achieve. But in that space, our authentic self is neglected. So I'm 50 years old now. I have exited my company. And what I'm actually creating for myself is like something that's authentic, not like a survival, not a, like a adaptation, something to do in order to feel like I'm good enough in the world, like no more of that.
I mean, that's pretty deep stuff. And I think, like you said, many of us, it's almost too late when we have that realization, right? It's good that you caught it now, right? Versus like, you know, towards like the end of your deathbed, which I feel like is when most people have that like aha or that realization. I read a lot of like billionaire biographies, and it's often a similar trend, right? It's like, okay, well, I didn't really have a father growing up, or, you know, so I'm going to show the world that I could become a billionaire, or, you know, my family didn't love me, or whatever it is. Like and then they reach a stage where they want to be a contribution. They want to be generous. They want to give back to society. Yeah, that's, I think what you said is very common with a lot of Asians. And on the Enneagram, it's type 3, which is the achiever. And like you said, which is equivalent to the winning formula being like the more promotions, the more titles, like the more success we have, we think that'll inherently make us happy. And then it does for a fleeting second. And then we find out that, oh, actually, I might have neglected my family, my spouse, my kids, like, you know, in the meantime. So it's yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's very vulnerable and very authentic.
Yeah, right. Like, we live our life like trying to prove ourselves to something or somebody or to ourselves or to what, like, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, in that passage of trying to prove ourselves to the world out there or to ourselves, if we're contributing, great, right? Like, in my case, I created a lot of jobs. I created a lot of bonds between humans and dogs. A lot of owners were educated on becoming great dog parents. Lives of dogs were improved in the city. That's all great, but it's funny. All of it in the background is me trying to prove myself. And then I took a pause and I'm like, what am I trying to prove? Like, where am I coming from? I'm coming from scarcity, some sort of, I'm not good enough. I'm not even aware that I'm doing it. Every day I'm just in this hamster wheel and I'm getting more and more burnt out and more exhausted. And justifying that by saying, well, you know, it's this, and yeah, well, it's paying the bills, or yeah, well, I'm providing jobs, or yeah, well, this, but who I actually was neglecting in that process was the authentic me. Yeah.
And it's tricky, right? Like you said, because you do reflect and you see the happy dogs and you see the happy owners, right? So there's so many feedback mechanisms that like validate. You're like, oh, wow, like it's, you know, but then, like you said, we all reach a tipping point where we're like, why am I so tired? And then we start to explore and have that more introspective journey. I know you shared something like pretty vulnerable with us about your husband. That sounded like that was also like a pretty big tipping point for you as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm, you know, focused on work, and there I am trying to prove myself to the world. I'm not even aware that I'm doing it. Just running the hamster wheel, working, proving myself. What was actually in the background is I'm not enough, or I'm not enough for something. And therefore I'm doing, which was in a way great, right? Because it gave me fuel to become successful. But what I was actually doing was neglecting what was most important, which was family, home, my husband. So during that time in which I was checked out, not even realizing that I'm checked out. In fact, I'm thinking I'm so awesome because I'm paying the bills. I'm so awesome because I bring home the bacon. Look at me. I'm not your standard Asian woman. I'm not dependent. I'm independent, right? This kind of extreme like version of like feminazism. Like, I don't need you, right? Like, I'm independent. I'm strong. Some sort of weird compensation from childhood. There I am neglecting my husband. And so what happened was he took off and had an affair. Now, I'm not taking responsibility for what he did, but I will take 100% responsibility for how I made him feel, which was that he didn't feel respected and loved. Right? What he chose to do beyond that, I'm not responsible for taking his pants off. He did it himself.
right. Yeah.
But am I responsible for making him feel like he didn't matter? He wasn't loved. He wasn't respected. 100%. I was a completely tuned out wife, checked out, just focusing on work, trying to prove myself. And so what I realized through the series of events that happened specifically, that is like really what is essential is invisible to the eye. We focus so much on what's visible, right? Success, title, money. Am I enough? Am I enough? Some sort of like tangible, visible trophy of sorts, perhaps. I'm not sure, right? But really what I realized when that happened was what is essential is really invisible to the eye. And what it is what's missing is love, like love towards others and love really for the self. Because if that was there, if we were abundant there, then none of this hamster wheel thing that we do would be taking to the point of excess, right? I realized that what I was doing was actually fulfilling some sort of a lack, a scarcity within me. And I'm not aware that I'm doing it. So then by doing so, then I actually created a reality in which there really was a lack, which was that I actually damaged my marriage. Really interesting.
Thank you. Wow, that's really courageous. Thanks for sharing so openly. And yeah, I mean, it's just courageous to acknowledge our portion in it, because I think typically most people would just blame the other person. And it's like, he's a piece of shit. Like, he deserves to go to hell. And, you know, that's like the more common dialogue that we often have. And, you know, we all have gone there, right? Like, we all have blamed someone else for something. And that's really like, it takes a lot of work. Like, it's clear that you've done a lot of work on yourself to see that, you know, you were neglecting like the person that is, you know, supposed to be like the most important person in your life, you know. And hearing you share that, like, I definitely see very similar parallels with myself and how I was able to like get into LinkedIn, which is it was like as hard as getting into Harvard or harder than getting into Harvard. And so, you know, like you said, a lot of the typical Asian stuff of like trying to prove myself because like that's what everyone else is doing. And and you know, it was so, I mean, just the other day my wife like shared with me, like recount to those days where she would wait for me. She the food would get cold, like the dinner would get cold because she would wait for me, and she would lose her appetite by the time I came home at like 10 p.m. because I was too busy like networking every night. And so yeah, very similarly, it's like the one person who gives me unconditional love, like I resisted the hell out of it because I was just like, I guess subconsciously, I'm like, I'm not worthy of this love. So I would self-sabotage, you know, you know, and I was doing it, like you said, totally unconsciously. Like I didn't know, right? On the outside, it looked great because I was like publishing books, like, you know, winning awards, employee of the month, blah, blah, blah. And then yet, like, my wife is like, babe, like, you know, I miss you. Like, when am I going to see you? Or like, do you have time to hang out this weekend? Like, she has to, you know, I have to like, she has to book time in my calendar. You know, it's like, that was like a tipping point. I was like, oh God, I need to do something about this. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because on our deathbed, right? Like, are we going to sit there and reflect upon all the trophies and how much is in the bank account? And how many accolades we receive from whatever status we achieve? And are we going to sit there and talk about the news articles that we got, like, I don't know, our name is in, right? Is that the stuff we're going to sit there and reflect upon in our deathbed? I think not.
Yeah. And I think it's really awesome that because if all that didn't happen with your husband, with your work and all that, like you wouldn't have so much wisdom and knowledge and experience and relatedness to be able to essentially connect with like any human being, right? I think it's like, obviously it was very painful that all that happened, and you know, I wouldn't wish it upon like any of my enemies, right? Because it sounded like there was a lot of heartbreak and sadness and sorrow and stuff like that. But yeah, it's made you this like incredibly generous and kind person who really gets when someone goes to any sort of suffering or adversity, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Typically something like this is a circumstance in which it would get pretty hideous and ugly. One would definitely as being the one that, let's say, for the lack of a better word, cheated on. What happens typically there is, okay, I wasn't good enough. I'm not this, I'm not that. And then perhaps go into that blame world of he's an asshole and he's that and he's this. And it just kind of ends up being really hideous, reinforcing each side's insecurities even more. It becomes really kind of gross, right? But what really came out of all of this is really, I think it was probably the best thing that happened to me. It sounds kind of crazy, but it really is. Mm. It actually really is the best thing that happened to me. In fact, I think it's the greatest gift that my husband gave to me, what he did for himself and for him, really. And the conclusion after a lot of, you know, reflection on this, the conclusion I came to is what he did had nothing to do with me. It actually had nothing to do with me. Did I provoke it? Absolutely. I provoked it through neglect. Mm-hmm. Not from not allowing him to feel respected and loved, because I'm not there. I'm trying to prove myself. I'm trying to mask my own insecurities. At the time, I'm not even realizing I'm being insecure, or that, you know, what's in the background is some sort of lack or scarcity or insecurity on my part, right? Instead of creating an interdependent, loving, respectful relationship, what I was doing was busy masking my insecurities, pretending that's not there by becoming extremely competent. I'm a, you know, at what I do at work. And another interesting thing that's happening is as I'm overworking myself, exhausting myself, I'm doing it saying I'm proving my, like, what's the word? I'm not even aware that I'm proving myself. But I'm justifying everything I'm doing by saying, well, look at me, like, I'm so independent, I'm so this, I'm so that, when what I'm actually doing is collecting even more evidence of some sort of scarcity and lack and insecurity on my part, right? And I realize, I mean, we're not alone here, right? We all do this. We put our foot on the hamster wheel and we spin and we spin and we spin. And it's never enough, never happy. However much money goes into the bank, never enough. It's just never enough. Nothing is good enough because it's some sort of, like, how do I even put this? Like a lack, like a missing. We're always trying to fill an empty hole of some sort. And that hole, that empty hole, is not even real. First of all, we're not even aware that that's there, this empty hole that we're trying to fill, right? And then that empty hole, once it's identified, is not even real. It's something that was made up by some sort of event when we were a very young child, some sort of incident or a circumstance that was injurious to us as children. And then for the rest of our lives, we are trying to compensate, trying to fill that hole.
Crazy. It's just crazy to think, right? It's mind blowing. Like, when we truly grasp that it's not real. And so many of us will argue forever that it is real, right? That's the crazy thing.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I identified through this work, I identified that there was some sort of an imaginary hole, and that I don't need to fill it anymore. That, yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Leah. This has been definitely one of the deepest conversations. And I'm sure a lot of people will get a lot out of this. one of the most common things people reach out to me with is during relationship breakdowns. So I think this will be a really good resource for in perpetuity for all of humanity. So thank you so much.
I love that they reach out to you for relationship breakdowns.
Yeah, it's like...
Yeah. And what I would say to those people, if they're listening, right, like, is really take the communication courses with Landmark, because that's your access to managing any relationship breakdowns, because it's all in communication. I'll end it with this, right? Between stimulus and response, there is a space. And I'm here. I'm speaking about communication. When people say something and then we react, we get triggered, right? So for relationship breakdowns happen because of communication.
Yeah.
Between stimulus and response, there is a space. And therein lies our power to choose how we'll be. This is by Viktor Frankl, a survivor of Auschwitz, said this. But that we typically in communication, somebody says something, we made it mean something, we're offended by it, or we're angered by it, or we're saddened by it, or something, because we make all these words mean something, which reinforces whatever emptiness or pain that we're feeling inside, and then we'll respond to it. That stimulus will respond to it, and whatever comes out of our mouth typically is some sort of defense mechanism of some sort. Something to protect ourselves, or something to like shield ourselves from whatever they might be saying, right? When all it is just words, literally air out of their mouth. Yet we get devastated by it. We're like profoundly affected by it. We're injured by words. Anybody listening, I would say take the communication courses, because you'll uncover all of those armors, the ways in which we listen and how we speak, as if like words is like war or something. When it's just words.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good, you had me present to what I received out of the communication courses and also coaching it, right? I was very present to it, but I distinctly remembering like, approaching, well, my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, right, and just owning up and taking responsibility for how I was interpreting her feedback, or you know, and honestly, like it was true, like a lot of what she said was just me not willing to man up and take responsibility for where I was out of integrity, you know. So I was present to that from the Access to Power course, and then I remember Power to Create, I was able to recreate, I was able to listen, like actually receive her unconditional love that I would resist a lot, you know, so I was present to that as well. So thanks for presencing me to that.
Powerful stuff, huh?
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And yeah, reach out to any one of us if you want to learn more about the communication courses or a Landmark team management and leadership program. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here, Davidson. Okay.